Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
Herc Cut the Lights is a South African artist, DJ, producer, and sound engineer who has been the mastermind behind many of South Africa's biggest hits. From mega hits like Shwala Bam Remix, Kwenzekile, and Champion Sound, his ability to seamlessly blend diverse sounds and genres has earned him a place at the pinnacle of the music production world. Starting his career on SoundCloud in 2017, Herc quickly gained recognition, leading to collaborations with some of Africa's most prominent artists, including Ricky Rick, Focalistic, and global superstars Davido and Wizkid. Herc's journey is a testament to his relentless pursuit of excellence. His unique sound and innovative approach have left an indelible mark on the music landscape, earning him multi-platinum status and 2 nominations for Producer of the Year at the SA Hip Hop Awards. His influence extends beyond commercial success, as he is also deeply committed to nurturing emerging talent, shaping the future of music through mentorship and creative collaboration. Herc continues to be a dynamic force in the industry, pushing artistic boundaries and setting new standards for music production. Up next on the Celeb Savant, live in studio at Solid Gold Podcasts in Johannesburg, South Africa, is Herc Cut the Lights. And I'm joined today with Herc Cut the Lights. How are you doing?
I'm cool. How are you doing, bro?
I'm good, thank you. That's good. Thank you for joining us today. So now, where does the name come from? How was the name came to be?
So it started off as Hercules, because I'm a big fan of Greek mythology and stuff. But then I didn't like the Disney comparisons. Every single time I typed Hercules, I just see Disney. So yeah, then the one time I was recording my friend and he was like, yo, Herc Cut the Lights. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I like that. Also because it sounds like a statement. So I just really like the whole sentence.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, there's also a Hercules character in the Avengers, the Marvel comics.
Yeah, you know about that one.
But I suppose Disney's more prevalent because it's like,
yeah, you know, the
Disney
cartoon.
Exactly. Okay. So now let's rewind it. What age did you feel cool? You want to be in the entertainment creative world. And how did that journey move to where we are today?
I mean, I always had a knack for music, and like I just grew up around music naturally. When I was a kid, one of my friend's dad had a studio, so we used to spend a lot of time in the studio. So basically from like primary school, I've just always been like around music. And then after high school, I just took a gap year, and then I never went back to school, and then it was just music the whole time.
But how did the creation of the music from then become become successful? What were those steps to get that to that point?
I guess, well, in the beginning it was just fun.
Yeah.
But then obviously we started linking up and meeting more established people, and then I traveled to Nigeria for the music, and then that's when I realized like, okay, this is actually a real thing that I could focus on because it can actually like catapult me into different spaces. And yeah.
So was it a surprise that when you realized that it could be an actual thing, because you were just doing it for fun? Or did you realize, okay, we've laid the groundwork, it actually makes sense?
It actually made sense from the beginning, because like I said, I grew up like around a lot of musicians, so it was always something that like we looked at, and I saw some mistakes that the older guys made that I could fix, and then that's how I made it better.
Okay, so this is interesting. How did you see these mistakes, and what were they, and how did you realize you could fix them?
Obviously just also understanding that as much as it's an entertainment industry, it's also a job. So I guess a lot of people in the beginning, like if you don't really know what you're doing, it kind of just feels like you're having fun and you don't really treat it like a job. So that's one thing that I realized that some guys didn't do. So once they did get spotlight, it was always like about the spotlight and the club. But for me, I realized that the actual asset is the music and the work. And then everything else comes after. And then if you take care of the music, then the music will take care of you.
Would you also potentially say that go there, perform, have fun, and then just sort of party or whatever, not necessarily party, but just be relaxed in it, compared to going there, see who to connect with, not necessarily fans, more in the industry world, the music industry, to create more steps for them beyond that show. So instead of seeing it as a silo thing, they could see it as a bigger picture.
Yeah. Also just like not getting lost in what's happening, because like a lot of things move fast in the music industry. So it's always like, it's always important just to remain grounded and understand why and why you started doing what you're doing.
Okay. It can happen fast, but sometimes to get to that fast point is a slow point.
Yeah.
Like, it's, when is this going to happen? When is it going to happen? And then boom, boom, boom.
And before you know it, you're in the deep end.
Yeah. So from 0 to 3 to 4 minutes in creating a song or a creativity or creating music, is it easy every time? What motivates it? What invigorates it? Let's unpack your creative brain.
It's not the most easiest thing because, like, I'm always trying to get like a feeling out of a song, and I'm never trying to make the same song, whether it be production or lyric wise. So I always have to kind of like channel my mind and put myself into a space to be able to create. Cause sometimes I do like feel like a lack of inspiration because I also do a lot of engineering and mixing. So there's a lot of technical stuff when it comes to engineering, but when it comes to production, there's more creativity.
Okay.
So then I always just have to separate myself and like set, dedicate time to engineering and then take a break, go experience life. And then when I'm ready for production, try and emit what it is that I'm feeling.
When you say engineering, is it for yourself or for other people or both?
Other people.
Other people.
Yeah.
But you do it for yourself as well or not when you...
I mean, yeah, I do mix and master all my songs, but like I do a lot of live stage performances for Scorpion Kings. But yeah, just mixing and mastering projects, okay. For a lot of the artists that I work with.
Does it sometimes get overwhelming knowing that, okay, I'm doing all this stuff for all these other artists and then I have to create for myself as well? Do you need to take sometimes take a couple of weeks and say, okay, nothing, no music?
It gets really overwhelming. Like she even knows, like it gets overwhelming because sometimes I really have to pull myself out and be selfish and just give my time, like myself time to relax. Because like a lot of the times, like, everything I'm doing is for the other artists, even though it is helping me in my career.
Yes.
It's like I sometimes don't focus on the stuff that I'm supposed to be doing for myself. So it does get overwhelming.
I don't think it's being selfish. It's just like standing in your power.
Yeah.
You've referenced that you mix and master for other artists, and then you collaborate with artists for your own productions.
Yeah.
Have you collaborated with all the artists you've mixed and mastered for in your world or not? Necessarily.
All the artists I collaborate with, I mix and master for.
Because
I prefer to handle most of the final mixes of all the work that it is that I do. So every artist that it is that I produce for, I mix and master. Because I know how I want the beat to sound. Because sometimes when you send off your song to another engineer, they might reduce the kick and it doesn't hit as hard.
Okay.
So I've been able to find the balance in between what it is that I like and what the artist like.
What's coming up next?
Obviously, I have my new single out now, Talagwe, with Shava Black here and Young Steiner. So we're working on the video on that. Just trying to expand the musical expression, especially with the record. I mean, like, I'm a hip-hop producer, but with this one, I chose to go with Afro just to challenge the whole narrative of younger guys actually tapping into their culture more. So, yeah, the next stuff is definitely the video, but there's a whole lot of work that I'm working on. There's a couple of albums that I've finished that I've submitted. Ricky Rick's album is on the way. Blackie just released an EP, and I'll see you soon. That came out last week, Friday. So, yeah, it's quite a lot on the way.
So those were your production?
Yeah.
Your production
and engineering.
Engineering.
Yeah,
production. But you didn't feature yourself as an artist on
that? No, I only started, like, releasing music. This song, this single is my first single.
Okay.
Yeah, it's my first single. And it's not me on the vocals. Yeah, it's just me on the production and on the entire direction of the record.
Why did it take you so long to decide to release your own record?
It's because of the way I wanted to articulate the music. And I just felt like I wasn't ready sonically to give the people what it is that I wanted and what I was hearing. So it's just a matter of like growing and training myself into learning how to produce and engineer so that I could deliver at a level.
What was the thing that allowed you to think, okay, I'm ready now? Was there any specific moment or?
When my mom started singing my song, that's when I knew that I'm finally making music for a greater crowd than myself. Because in the beginning, we used to make music just for us.
Yes.
But then when my mom started singing the songs, that's when I knew that the songs are connecting further than what we used to. So then that's when I felt like, okay, now this is the beginning of a whole new journey.
And you referenced a little bit earlier that you normally produce hip hop, but now you've branched out into Afro.
Yeah, yeah.
So as it is a little bit out of the comfort zone, so was there a bit of hesitation to do it, or did you just dive straight in and think, okay, let me push myself there?
I mean, there wasn't hesitation at all, because I grew up listening to a lot of Afro. My dad listened to a lot of Kizomba. So there wasn't a lot of hesitation. For me, it was just like a thing of not knowing how to make an Afro beat, and that's why I didn't do it.
And through training and production and learning of these years traveling, it allowed you to learn that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I love me a CD. Okay. I still budget for my CDs every month. I'm not sure if you're aware, CDs, cassettes, and vinyls are a massive comeback all around the world.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Cassettes even, but mainly vinyls. Last year in the UK, 5.9 million vinyls, the biggest since 1990. Now, in the UK, there's a basket of products that they use to gauge income tax. Vinyls have been in this basket for a number of years. CDs, because of their upward trajectory and mass of people, and it's the younger people buying them, not the older people, that product is now back in the basket for income tax. In Thailand, they've just opened a vinyl factory that's been closed for 50 years. But we've also got these streaming platforms where people consume music on. What is your perceptions and observations of the landscape at the moment?
The way that music is consumed now has definitely changed a lot in terms of who can release music. Because I guess like 20 years ago, when there was vinyls and CDs, the record labels had the monopoly, because then they could control the distribution of everything.
Yeah.
And then that's how record label deals were important. So now with Spotify and Apple Music, it just gave the people more power and more access to release music. So I think, like, with the whole vinyl situation and how it's coming back now, it definitely creates an attachment for the music. Because yes, when it's on your phone, it's like you can just skip and it's exactly, like, it's not that cool. But if you see the actual vinyl, it's like it's a relic, or, yeah.
And it's experience. Because for me, when I get my CDs, like, it's the journey of the choice, the journey of the receiving, the unpacking, the booklets, listening to song from one to whatever number. It's like a whole journey and experience where you like, where it's fun. I don't like this one. Let's just skip. So completely, I hear and agree with what you're saying. And you obviously have collaborated with a number of artists that you've had second or third or fourth collaborations with. When you're collaborating with artists you've never collaborated with before, is it just diving straight in, or is it a moment of understanding where each other's are, getting an understanding of each other's personalities, or how does that process work?
Yeah, I like to get to know the person first. Sometimes we'll go have lunch, just have a gauge on music taste, listen to different music. And then sometimes it actually even takes like 3 or 4 sessions before I usually start creating with an artist, just so I understand what it is that they're trying to do and what they're looking for. So I never rush like straight into it, because I always feel like then it's kind of going to be mis-articulated.
Bucket list of 5. 5 local, and let's put it out there, international artists that you have yet to collaborate with, which are on your bucket list at this moment. I know it'll change all the time, but in this moment in time.
Tems, Drake, Travis Scott, Asake, and Lil Wayne.
Okay. Those came quickly.
yeah, definitely.
Okay, another little game I'm going to play with you. So I know... if I had to ask you this question in 2 minutes, 10 years, 5 minutes, 50 years, I know your answer will be different every time. And I recognize that and I understand that, because there are millions of them. I'm not saying favorite, I'm saying top of mind. If you had to push play to 5 songs once we finish this conversation, what would those 5 songs be and by whom?
Yozomite by Travis Scott. Asibe Happy by Kabza De Small. It's tricky. Amelie by Lil Wayne.
Ooh, 2 more. This is when it starts to get difficult. Just first 2 that come to mind.
Future Feds Did a Sweep. Young Thug. What Young Thug song?
Digits. There we go. I like that. You've referenced that production is more on the creative side, whereas mix and mastering is more technical.
Yeah.
So I'd like to understand these for the listeners who are not in the industry, who don't understand what these words mean. What does it mean to be a producer, and how is it creative?
I mean, obviously it starts with the beat, the instrumental production, and just song arrangement. So even being a producer, you don't have to know how, you don't have to know how to make a beat to be a producer. You can be a producer just by directing a song, being like, okay, maybe I think at this point of the song, we can have more drums, and just basically arrangement.
So coming up with the concepts and ideas of how the journey of the song starts to how it ends, putting input around that.
Yeah, basically. Yeah.
Okay. And when it comes to that, how much, and I'm guessing it might be different every time, but can you confirm that when you're producing a song, how much is it input from yourself compared to the artist? Or is it different every time and depends who you're collaborating with?
It's different every time because sometimes I make beats on my own and then sometimes I'll just have a melody. Sometimes the artist will be like, yo, I have this bounce. Can we start with this bounce? So it differs. It definitely differs because obviously you don't want the music to sound the same. So I'm open to like working, starting with drums or starting with a melody.
Mix and mastering, you referenced it's technical. What does that mean?
It's a lot of maths, a lot of calculation. Yeah.
Okay, that's interesting. What do you explain?
Yeah, because obviously like it's the ultimate loudness of the song, how loud the song is, just to make sure the bass isn't distorting so that when the listener listens, they receive the music smoothly rather than a harsh song. So, yeah, there's just a lot of numbers that go into it, measuring the sound, how loud the song is, and yeah.
And I suppose also it's about balancing the different instruments when they're playing together and the person's voice so that none of the instruments overpower the person's voice and you can still hear clearly what they, am I understanding?
Yeah.
Wow, maths. I never knew maths came in.
Yeah, because it's decibel measurements.
Oh, my God.
Frequencies and all that stuff, so.
So, for, again, I'm gathering maybe it will be different every time, but how long would it take to mix and master 3 to 3.5 minute song? Or is it, again, different depending on how many people are singing, how many instruments, or?
I mean, with me, when I start my records, I already start off with the process of it being mixed and mastered. So usually by the time the song is done being recorded, it's ready to be pushed out. But if it's someone else's song, it may take me like maybe 3 hours.
Oh, okay. Not so bad. So are those, when you see studios with all those buttons and knobs and stuff, that all the stuff there that's used for production and mix and mastering?
Yeah. But there's a lot of digital softwares now.
Okay.
So yeah, that's why it's easier for a lot of people to have access to DAW softwares because before you needed the big studios and the SSL boards.
Yes.
But now you have the actual softwares and the DAWs so you can do everything on your computer.
Has the digitalization of it taken away some of the authenticity of the human interaction with it?
Yeah.
Do you understand my question?
To a certain point it does because like even like with the piano, like there's a difference with real time piano instead of just drawing it on the board and it's like 1-4-4-4.
Yeah.
It kinda like loses its feel. So I definitely do think the hardware has changed a lot. Because even with like a lot of the processors, they actually get warmer the longer you use them. So then the vocal sounds thicker. So now without those processors, it doesn't have that room to get warm anymore.
Okay.
So yeah, just basically affects how the vocal sounds, whether the vocal is as warm as it would be in the big studio. So yeah.
What do you mean by warm?
Just like, I don't know how to break it down. I'm trying to find a way to break it down.
Okay.
But just like thick. Like thick.
Okay.
In terms of like.
Yeah, so instead of it sounding like one dimensional, hollow and watery, it's three dimensional.
Yeah, it's more upfront and yeah.
Okay. Got it. Understood. Obviously, not all producers are mixers and masterers, correct? So having had... which one did you start first?
Production.
Production?
Yeah.
And how long into it did you do then going to the technical side?
So I started making beats in 2015 and then engineering basically started happening during around COVID. So around 2019.
So was that because you knew how you wanted the beats to sound and you didn't really be like delegating?
Yeah.
And you felt that in the pod?
And also because we couldn't afford engineers.
Okay.
So we had to learn on our own just basically how to get it done.
So that was the reason why you did it?
Yeah.
And now in understanding engineering and production, has it helped either side? Obviously, it must do.
Yeah, obviously because then I started understanding exactly what it is that I wanted and how I wanted to sound and it also helped with direction. So, yeah.
What is your perceptions on social media?
In the beginning, I wasn't big on social media. Mm-hmm. Obviously, because of naturally being a producer, you just used to being in the background.
Yes.
So I wasn't always big on social media. But now, obviously, because I'm releasing music, I have to put myself out there more. So it's something that I'm definitely still getting comfortable with, but yeah.
This is an interesting conversation because you were behind the scenes for longest periods of time, and now you're becoming more in front of the scenes or in the limelight. Besides the social media side, are there aspects about it that you are actually surprised that about that didn't realize that were part of it? Or seeing the other artists and collaborating with them as you have gave you sort of a peripheral view of what to expect?
Yeah, I think it's just observing other people and then just seeing how other people did it. And then obviously because there's kind of like a template. So I just basically used the same template as the other people.
Okay.
So, yeah.
And then knew what not to do, observing them because they did a few things wrong.
Obviously still learning, but yeah.
The podcast is listened to throughout the world. So as a final message, what would you like to say?
Don't give up on your dreams, for real. Because like when I started doing it, a lot of people didn't believe in what I was doing. So no one really knows what you're doing until you get it done.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.